This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanisin with Noel Lim and Kusu Chuang in the studio this morning. It is 7.06 a.m. and in about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking to Richard Reckert, Dr. Richard Reckert, lead economist at the World Bank, for a breakdown on the projection of Malaysia's economic growth. We've also got a poll on Twitter right now at BFM Radio. How should the government help Mark Chikia and the B40 segment during this crisis? Some of the options are more cash handouts, upskilling programs, or cheaper financing. Or you could tell us what you think. But before we get into all of that, let's take a look at the markets. Noel, how did the US do?
Not so good. Not such a great start to the new quarter. The Dow, S&P 500 and Nasdaq all closed down 4.4%. And I think even the Asian markets likewise had fallen.
And Chuang, what about the Asian markets? Specifically, anything popping out there?
Well, the Shanghai Comp is down by 0.6%, Singapore is down by 1.7%, the KLCI down by 2.1%, the Kospi down 4%, the Hang Seng down 2.2%, and the Nikkei fell by 4.5%. So a sea of red all across the board.
All red. Let's see how they open up later in about 2 hours. But right now, let's take a look at global markets, a deeper look at global markets. And to do that, we speak to Tony Nash, CEO of Complete Intelligence. Tony, thank you for joining us on the line this morning. Now, the Dow and the S&P 500 extended their loss after their worst quarter since 2008, as Trump warned of a painful 2 weeks. I think for the Dow, this was the worst quarter since 1987, if I'm not incorrect there. Now, how badly is this going to hit U.S. corporate earnings across the board?
Bad. it depends on the industry sector, but generally, it's hitting things pretty bad. I mean, stores are shut. Businesses are shut, you know, the grill, you've seen it in Asia. So, you know, I guess the good news is it's only part of Q1, so the last few weeks of Q1. But I guess the big question mark and the reason markets are really staying negative is nobody is sure how long the bad news will endure. Is it another couple weeks? Is it another few months? And that's why we're seeing markets in the red, because nobody really knows. And so I live in Houston, in Texas. It's the energy capital of the world. Malaysia's feeling similar pressures with oil and gas. And a lot of my neighbors, thousands of my neighbors, have been laid off from their jobs. So it's not just the stores being shut and business not happening. Its actual income's not coming in as well. So that consumption part of the GDP calculation will be decimated for at least a few weeks. And this is why you've seen the big government intervention come in with the $2 trillion plan, which allows government spending, that G part of the GDP calculation, it allows that to replace some of the consumer spending and investment component that's been displaced over the last few weeks and will be displaced for at least a part of Q2. So our view is that this, of course, isn't the last fiscal plan in the U.S. We expect at least one more, if not two. So $5 to $6 trillion in fiscal spending from the U.S. government. The real question is whether other governments can afford to match a similar proportion of their GDP. I'm skeptical that many of them can. So what matters right now to consumers is fiscal heft, fiscal spending. What central banks do don't matter as much. What matters is getting hands and money into the hands of consumers.
U.S. right now has over 200,000 COVID-19 cases, and the situation does not look like it's improving, and we might see even more lockdowns in the U.S. So do you expect markets will perform even more badly in April, and how might markets land in April?
No, I think what's affecting markets really is the uncertainty, not necessarily the case count, because, you know, not all tests are created equally, and what really matters in the case count is the denominator. So what we found is U.S. test is actually pretty accurate, unlike a number of other tests out there. And so the number of false positives and false negatives are a lot lower, from what I understand, on the U.S. test. And the portion of the population that's been tested in the U.S. is growing pretty rapidly. So although we see those case counts growing, we see it as a fairly good example of the real picture in the U.S. Now, what we're seeing on the ground here in the U.S., so the governor of Texas came out a few days ago and said that 99% of the bed space allocated for COVID patients is empty, okay? So we're not seeing people in hospitals here. We are seeing things in other parts of the country, and of course there are cases here, but what we're hearing again and again and again is that people will come in with other ailments that will be diagnosed as COVID. So COVID is a secondary or tertiary infection to something that is really, really ailing them. So, and that's the question that people need to start peeling back is, you know, is COVID the primary cause of that fatality? Or was there already a number of other ailments in place and COVID was somewhat incidental? Until we start asking these questions, we really won't understand how deep and dire the problem is.
Yeah, Tony, there's a shortage of U.S. dollars in the world today, obviously, as a safe haven. The Fed has introduced a new repo facility for foreign central banks to draw down on. What do you know about this facility and how effective has it been?
Well, it's been pretty effective. I mean, we see the trade-weighted dollar down around 99 with a 99 handle on it now. It was up 103 or something, which makes it very difficult for people outside of the U.S. needing dollars. There's a lot of U.S. dollar-denominated debt. There's a lot of trade conducted in U.S. dollars. So if the U.S. dollar is expensive, and if governments are having to buy medical equipment and other things in U.S. dollars, it makes it even harder for them to address some of these COVID concerns. So the U.S. government's been working very hard to help other countries by pushing the value of the U.S. dollar down. So these facilities make it easy for countries to put up pretty low-quality assets in exchange for U.S. dollars so that the U.S. can churn more U.S. dollars out into the global economy to bring that supply up and, of course, bring the value down. So I'm not really optimistic that they'll be able to keep it down for long. I think the flight to kind of safe haven currencies is going to persist. So I think the dollar value is going to rise, continue to rise. But I think it's really important for the Fed to focus on this and to take these efforts in the short term to help countries get the equipment they need and transact in dollars at a lower value.
Now, Tony, a recent World Bank report forecasted a severe contraction for China this year. However, their latest PMI data beat market expectations. What is your current outlook on China's economy?
Yeah, that's an interesting forecast because the World Bank economists can't have a very downbeat China forecast without China's permission. So, so somebody is trying to get bad news out there. Okay, so I think what we may be seeing, because we saw the PMIs come out a couple days ago that weren't that bad, but we've also seen a lot of government spending to try to offset the lack of business and consumer activity. So there's no doubt there's going to be a bad reading in China this year. And I think the World Bank report is a way for the Chinese government to allow that to get out into the market first, so they're not seen as disappointing on their deliverable of 6%. So complete intelligence has believed that China's been growing at 4-5% for the past couple of years. So with this, I think it's a 2.7% rate, they said, for Q2 or something, I can't remember. But it allows China to deliver under 6%, but deliver over whatever the World Bank forecast was, so that they can start to notch down those expectations. So I think the World Bank report is probably credible. I don't know that it's necessarily that dire, but it might be. But I think it gives the NBS in China an excuse to clock significantly under 6 for the year.
Tony, how about your comments change in the context of a couple of reports overnight suggesting, A, that China has been doctoring the data on coronavirus the last couple of months, and B, that a county in China and other reports suggesting that parts of the country is now under new lockdowns because of a further outbreak?
Well, first, I don't think it's surprising to anybody that China's been doctoring the data, but I don't think China is unique. I think there are many, many countries out there that are doctoring the data. Political leaders are afraid that Corona would be seen as a political failure. And so I think many, many numbers. I mean, China is usually singled out in this kind of data doctrine, which they're guilty, but they're not the only ones, okay? And is there a resurgence of this? I don't know if there's a resurgence as much as maybe it didn't tail off in the way the Chinese authorities said it did. So whether it's a statistical resurgence, maybe that's the case, but these were maybe always there, and they didn't see the decline that was expected several weeks ago. I think that's likelier than the fact that there's just some crazy resurgence in COVID in China. But, I don't think anybody should be shocked. I don't think China is any more guilty than anybody else. They're known for this. A lot of statistics ministries are known for misreporting, and health agencies are misreporting. So it's just a nature of reporting national level data that can be seen as politically sensitive.
All right, Tony, thank you so much for joining us on the line this morning. That was Tony Nash, CEO of Complete Intelligence.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.